Welcome to the Quarterly Briefing, where we take a closer look at the financial stories behind the world's biggest public companies, powered by AI to make it smarter, faster, and more engaging. Our goal is to make financial data more accessible by demystifying the complexities of corporate finance and informing people about the dynamics of today's markets. This podcast is not financial advice. It's for entertainment and educational purposes only. If you're curious about how companies grow, stumble, or pivot in today's fast-paced markets, you're in the right place. This is The Quarterly Briefing, where AI meets numbers and numbers meet narrative.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Today we're going to be diving into P&G's first quarter 2025 earnings. You've given us their earnings call transcript, the presentation slides, and even their 10Q filing. So a lot to unpack here.
Yeah, real info haul this time.
Exactly. So let's see what we can learn about, you know, about P&G's performance and what it might tell us about the broader, the global consumer landscape.
Oh. Well, I think what's interesting right off the bat is P&G reported 2% organic sales growth, which sounds, you know, decent on the surface, but it's actually a slowdown compared to the 7% growth they had a year ago.
Right. So a bit of a slowdown. What's driving that 2% growth?
So they're seeing 1 percentage point each from volume and pricing, but the mix is flat.
So they're not seeing consumers kind of trade up to those higher priced products as much?
Yeah, not as much as they might have expected.
Interesting. What do you think's behind that?
I mean, it could be a sign that that consumers are becoming more price sensitive, right? Yeah. You know, with the economic climate.
Makes sense. I mean, even a giant like P&G isn't immune to those kind of broader economic forces. They did say 8 out of their 10 product categories either grew or held steady in terms of organic sales.
Yeah, and that's a good sign. For the vast majority of P&G's business, things are still ticking along pretty well. Categories like family care, home care, and personal health care were the real stars. They pulled in mid-single digit growth.
So you have some areas doing really well, but then you have baby care and skin and personal care, which are both down mid-single digits. What's going on there?
Well, I think this category has definitely raised some questions. I mean, we know that 85% of P&G's business is actually performing quite well, growing at a solid 4%. But then you've got certain markets holding them back, particularly China and the Middle East.
And it doesn't sound like there's any clear picture of when those markets will, you know, will rebound. So that's a bit of a, I guess, another layer of uncertainty there. Okay, let's dig into the performance of some individual segments. Starting with beauty, they saw just 1% organic sales growth. And again, it seems like pricing was the main driver there.
Right, and the flat volume and negative mix in beauty tells us something important about consumer behavior. They actually lost a bit of ground in their global skincare market share, which I think is likely linked to their premium brand, SK-II, facing difficulties in China.
So that's a big deal, especially since they've been, you know, banking on these premium brands for growth. But on the flip side, they do have the Olay Super Serums, which are attracting a lot of new customers. I think they said 65% are new to that category.
Exactly. And remember, personal care is actually doing quite well, which helps offset some of skincare's decline.
All right, let's move on to grooming.
Grooming saw growth driven by volume up 5% and pricing up 1%. But it's being pulled back by a negative mix, down 3%. Globally, however, they're gaining market share, up 0.9 points, and seeing volume increases in regions like India, the Middle East, Africa, and Europe.
Wow. So a lot of regional variation in, you know, how consumers are responding. Next up, we have healthcare, another strong performer, with 4% organic sales growth. What's fueling that growth?
Well, mix and pricing are really the powerhouses in this segment. They also had a slight global market share increase, up 0.1 points, and they highlighted the success of their power brushes and premium toothpaste in oral care.
So it seems like that premiumization trend that we saw hints of in beauty is playing out in healthcare as well?
Absolutely. And in personal healthcare, they're seeing positive results from their focus on innovation and improving distribution channels.
Okay, what about fabric and home care?
Solid and steady performance there. 3% organic sales growth. Fabric care was flat, while home care saw low single-digit growth. And they gained another small sliver of global market share, up 0.1 points.
It's impressive how they consistently manage to edge out the competition, you know, even if it's by a small margin. What are they doing right in this segment?
Well, they've been focusing on innovation in North America, which is driving some of that fabric care growth. And in home care, they're benefiting from both positive mix and volume.
Okay, finally, let's talk about the segment that seems to be having a bit of an identity crisis. Baby, feminine, and family care. They're reporting flat organic sales overall. But I imagine there's a lot of variation within those categories.
You're right. Baby care is down high single digits, which isn't too surprising given the global birth rate trends. Feminine care is flat, and family care is showing low single-digit growth. Overall, they're actually losing market share in this segment, down 0.3 points.
So it sounds like they're facing some headwinds in the segment, both from external factors like, you know, declining birth rates and from internal challenges in maintaining market share. I'm curious to hear how they're addressing these issues, but let's maybe pick up with that in the next part.
Sounds good to me. So picking up where we left off, I think it's worth looking at P&G's margin performance. They mentioned a $300 million positive benefit from moderating commodity costs.
That's a pretty big win for them, though I do wonder if those commodity prices will stay stable.
Well, that's always the question, isn't it? Predicting commodity prices is like predicting the weather. Sometimes you get it right, sometimes you get soaked.
Right.
But for now, it's definitely a plus for P&G. We should also consider the interplay of pricing, productivity savings, and mix on their gross margin.
And could you maybe quickly remind us what gross margin means in this context? I'm sure some of our listeners might not be familiar with that term.
Of course. Gross margin is essentially the profit P&G makes after subtracting the cost of making their products.
Okay, so it's a measure of how efficiently they're turning, you know, raw materials and manufacturing costs into sellable goods.
Exactly.
Got it. And from what I saw in the 10Q, their gross margin actually ticked up slightly to 52.1% for the quarter.
So it seems like they're managing those cost pressures pretty effectively.
Yeah, they're clearly focused on, you know, driving productivity savings.
Yeah.
To offset some of those input cost increases. And of course, we also have to consider their SG&A expenses, which is selling, general, and administrative expenses.
Right. So those are the costs associated with marketing, salaries, office space, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So it sounds like P&G is walking this tightrope between, you know, investing in marketing to boost growth, but also keeping those expenses under control.
They're not alone in that. It's a challenge for all consumer goods companies right now. What's particularly interesting is their focus on making those marketing investments more efficient alongside broader productivity initiatives.
So they're basically trying to streamline operations, become leaner,
right,
while still trying to, you know, stay top of mind for consumers, which is a smart approach.
Absolutely. They're trying to do more with less, which is never easy. And this brings us back to the elephant in the room, the China question. Their sales decline there is quite significant, and they're attributing it to some fundamental shifts in Chinese consumer behavior.
It's not just about the overall economic slowdown in China, right? You're saying that Chinese consumers are changing how they shop, what brands they prefer, how they consume media.
Exactly. I mean, we're seeing the meteoric rise of e-commerce.
Yeah.
And a growing preference for homegrown domestic brands in China.
So P&G has long been this, you know, dominant force in that market. But now they're having to adapt to this new reality.
And it sounds like they're being proactive. They mentioned rebuilding their distributor partnerships, particularly in the online space. They're also tweaking their product portfolio and media strategies for the Chinese market.
So it's a clear sign of the times. Global companies can't just export their brands and expect success in a market as, you know,
complex and dynamic as China.
Right. They need to be much more nuanced and responsive to local tastes. And speaking of adapting, let's talk about innovation and disruption.
Yeah.
P&G emphasized their commitment to constructive disruption. I have to admit, that phrase sounds a bit like corporate jargon to me.
I think what they're getting at is a proactive, forward-looking approach to innovation. It's not just about reacting to existing trends, but about anticipating and shaping future ones.
So they want to be the disruptors, not the disrupted. They highlighted the success of Olay melts, which are designed to melt onto your skin.
Yeah.
And they seem quite optimistic about the potential of their new fiber skinning technology, Evo.
Those are definitely some great examples of product innovations. And they also hinted at broader disruptive technology strategies that they'll discuss at their Investor Day.
Right, which is coming up on November 21st in Cincinnati. Sounds like a must-watch event.
I agree. I'm curious to hear what they have to say about, you know, their long-term growth plans, how they intend to stay ahead of the curve.
What are you most interested in hearing about?
I'm particularly curious to see how they articulate their long-term strategy for growth. Will it be more about doubling down on their core strengths? Or are we going to see bolder moves into new markets or technologies?
I think their plans for China are at the top of my list. I want to hear concrete steps they're taking to try to regain that lost momentum.
It's a huge test for them.
And of course, we can't forget about the innovation pipeline. Will they unveil any groundbreaking new products?
Or will the focus be more on incremental improvements to their existing brands?
I guess we'll have to wait and see. But it seems safe to say that P&G is not sitting still. They're actively adapting. And the decisions they're making will have a ripple effect throughout the entire consumer goods industry.
Every move they make has implications, not just for them, but for their competitors and for the whole consumer landscape.
So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive, what's one key question you think our listeners should be pondering?
I think the big question is, can P&G successfully walk this tightrope between maintaining their core business and embracing disruptive innovation?
Can they be both the steady giant and the agile innovator?
That's the question, isn't it?
And we'll be back in part three to explore that question further. We're back for the final part of our deep dive into P&G's performance.
You know, as we've been talking about their results and strategies, it really strikes me how their story is almost a microcosm of what many large companies are grappling with.
Yeah, this whole balancing act of maintaining a solid core business, but also needing to adapt to these rapid changes and drive innovation. It's a universal challenge, I think.
It really is. And the way P&G is making these strategic choices, you know, their successes and even their struggles offer valuable lessons for anyone in a similar position trying to navigate this rapidly changing world.
Yeah, absolutely. And their upcoming Investor Day will give us even more insight into how they're approaching these challenges in the years to come. Anything you're particularly keen to hear about?
Well, I'm very curious to see how they articulate their long-term strategy for growth. Will it be more about doubling down on their core strengths, you know, those reliable categories and brands? Or are we going to see some bolder moves into new markets or technologies, acquisitions, partnerships? I'm on the edge of my seat.
I'm with you there. I'm also really interested to hear about their plans for China. You know, they've clearly acknowledged they need a new approach, but I want to hear concrete actions.
Yeah.
That they're taking to try to regain that lost momentum.
It's a huge test for them.
It is. And of course, we can't forget about that innovation pipeline.
Right.
Will they unveil any groundbreaking new products or technologies?
Or will the focus be more on incremental improvements to their existing brands?
Lots of questions. I guess we'll have to tune in to their Investor Day
to
get the answers. But based on what we've discussed today, it's safe to say that P&G is not standing still. They're actively adapting to a changing world, and the decisions they're making will have a ripple effect.
Yeah, every move they make has implications, not just for them, but for their competitors and the entire consumer landscape.
It's like watching a giant chess game unfold.
Exactly.
As we wrap up this deep dive into P&G, what's one final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I think we've seen that. P&G is facing its share of challenges, just like any large company in today's world. But they're also demonstrating resilience, adaptability, and a commitment to evolution. I think it's a powerful reminder that even the most established giants need to embrace change, be willing to adapt if they want to thrive over the long term.
It's so easy to get complacent, right? Stick with what's familiar.
Right.
But their story shows us that embracing change, seeking new opportunities, is essential for growth and success, no matter who you are.
So true. So as you reflect on P&G's journey, ask yourself, what can I learn from their experience? Am I embracing change in my own life? Am I seeking out new opportunities to learn, grow, and evolve? Because in a world that's constantly changing, that ability to adapt is more valuable than ever.
I love that takeaway. Thank you for joining me in this deep dive. I hope everyone listening found it as insightful as I did.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time, keep learning, keep exploring, and keep adapting. This is The Deep Dive, signing off.
This is The Quarterly Briefing, a W Section podcast production. This podcast was generated completely with AI. If you like the podcast, please give us a like and tell your friends. If you have feedback or different companies you would like us to include in a future episode, please send us an email at idea@quarterlybriefing.com. Thank you for listening.